Paul and Anne LePage reflect on their years in the Blaine House. 8 years ago, Waterville Mayor Paul LePage became the 74th governor of Maine. When he took office, the state and nation were slowly emerging from a deep and painful recession. The state's opioid epidemic was taking hold. Obamacare had just become law, and Democrats had lost 22 seats in the Maine House of Representatives, giving Republicans a slight majority for the first time in years. LePage was reelected in 2014 and continued his focus on lowering taxes, promoting Maine business, and preventing Medicaid expansion, among other priorities. Meantime, his wife Anne dedicated her years as First Lady to supporting military families and veterans. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we sit down with Paul and Anne LePage and discuss their legacy. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Here with me to co-host today's show is Mal Leary, Maine Public's political correspondent. Governor Paul LePage was first elected in 2010, then re-elected in 2014. He is here today to share his thoughts about his 8 years in office. By his side, Anne LePage. She has had a very full 8 years as well, serving as Maine's First Lady. And thank you both for taking time to come over to our studios today.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Jen.
And as always, we want to hear, what questions do you have for the governor or first lady? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Governor LePage, first I want to ask, I understand you had back surgery recently.
Yeah.
You don't seem any worse for the wear. How are you feeling?
I feel great. I mean, I feel much better today than I did the week before the surgery because it was really, really hampering my walking, and now I'm back to normal.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Anne, I want to turn to you and thank you for coming to Maine Calling, your first time on the program. Right now, as you're preparing to move out of the Blaine House and thinking about the past 8 years, what reflections do you find coming up at the front of mind?
You know, it's amazing. When you first get to the Blaine House, you're thinking, okay, 4 years. It's just amazing how quickly it has come and gone. It seems like yesterday we were just moving in, but I have enjoyed my time working with the military service members and their families. That has been such a joy and a treasure. They've been phenomenal. I really tried to keep it real and do things that were meaningful and bring as much awareness for certain things that I thought were important by doing some crazy things.
Like jumping out of
airplanes? Like jumping out of a plane, which I would never, ever do again. But I did it for the right reasons, and I'm glad I did it. So it's bittersweet.
And you did that for the Travis Mills Foundation.
Actually, I did it with Travis, but we were trying to raise money for a museum up in Aroostook County.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they had asked Travis to do that.
Yeah.
They asked Travis to do it, and he said, well, the only way I'm going to do it is if I do it with a First Lady. And at the time, I said, oh, sure, Travis, I'll do that. Let's do that. And then it didn't really dawn on me until the night before we were up in the county, and I said to Paul, I said, oh, my God, what did I get myself into? But I knew I had to do it. But we had the same group that did President Bush on his 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. And they had a reception the night before. Race Across America sponsored the jump. So it was Race Across America and the jumping crew. And Travis was there. And when I walked in, this guy named Tony came up to me and he says, First Lady, he says, what's the problem? There's something bothering you. And I said, yeah, there is. I'm not a small girl. I just expected you to be a little bit bigger than what you are because I was going to be jumping with him. And he said, just remember one thing. When you say no, I say go. So it was all good. It was all good.
Oh, wow. Mal?
Governor, when you look back on the past 8 years, what do you think is your proudest accomplishment? Because you fought a lot of battles with the legislature. You won some, you lost some.
I'd say that the one misunderstanding that I think most people have of me is that I came in here in 2010 knowing that the state was in dire financial straits. It was really bleeding, And I have done that kind of work for 20 years, so I knew what needed to be done, and I knew there was only certain things, there's only certain ways that can be fixed, and to stop that bleeding so that you can turn this big ship around and get it on the right course. And, people say you fought some battles, but I knew what had to be done, and we did it. And today, we're reaping the benefit of it.
Such as the reform of the pension system, which is going to benefit generations going forward.
Generations going forward. It's most of the things that we did were really long-term fixes. And it could be dismantled, there's no question, if somebody chooses to, but it's really structurally in a good place right now. The pension's in a good place, one of the best in the country, by the way, as far as funding. There was a lot of people unhappy that we froze COLA for 2 years, but it needed to be done. You needed to have the tourniquet on there. DHHS, I mean, what we really did there was not only was it good for Maine, but now we're seeing that it's good for America as the president's trying to get work rules saying if you're able and capable to work, you should contribute and go to work if there's a job. And so we need to work on our workforce development, which is going to be moving forward and continue. And I think the best thing that we've done, while it goes unnoticed most of the time, is the welfare reforms we've done are really helping a lot of good families. The people that are off welfare now are earning 114% more in revenue than they ever have in their lives. That's on an average. Some people, I tell the story of this nurse. She was in Aroostook County, two children, single mom, no education, hated me in 2010, absolutely hated me. In 2014, told me I got my bachelor's degree, I'm an RN, I work at Eastern Maine in Bangor. We get up every morning, go to work, and we're so proud. We're not taking anything from the state. We're contributing to the state. That's what it's all about.
I would say another accomplishment was the kids being able to get their associate's degree while they're still in high school.
Yeah, that's a big one. And this year we got 2,500 students that are in high school that will be graduating from high school, and some of them will have as much as a year of college completed. So, yeah, we've done a lot of little things like that I think are going to last and they're going to move on into the future. It's lowering the cost of education for the parents and for the student, and these are all good things that happen. They go under the radar many times, and while I'm doing my screaming over here, we're fixing over here.
And I was going to ask you what you're most proud of. Is that what you're most proud of for this administration?
Paul is very, very passionate. Anything that I did with the military, I was very proud of. The what Travis has in Mount Vernon, Rome, I mean,
unbelievable.
I call that Maine's gift to the nation, because it's veterans that are coming from all over the country that are able to experience life, normal life, with themselves and their families.
And this is retreat.
And this is his retreat, yes. So he has been and I always say it, in Maine there are so many organizations that help our veterans. You can't name them all. But we're very fortunate. We've got the Race Across America. We've got the Freeport Flag Ladies, who have been on that corner every single Tuesday since 9/11. That's just unbelievable. You've got the Troop Greeters in Bangor. I mean, we're a very patriotic state. So I'm very glad I picked the military. Very glad.
You know, people don't realize the Travis Mill Foundation and what they do in Mount Vernon is not a Maine treasure. It's a national treasure. I mean, they come from all over. And these are people that have given their utmost. They've given their limbs, and many of them have given their lives to this country. And some of them have come back with injuries that you can't see yet. And so I kudos. Kudos to Travis and to his foundation and to my wife for helping.
Governor LePage, as you look back, is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, I would have never reappointed Joe Jobber, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. He lied, and I just can't. I'm going to take that to my grave. I did it. I brought him in the office to tell him I wasn't going to reappoint him, and he begged me, I only have 1 year left for retirement. Give me one more year, and I'll go active retired, and then he gave me the middle finger, and that was real shameful.
And that's it?
That's the biggest disgrace I've ever seen in my life, that somebody sitting on the Supreme Court would lie to a sitting governor. It's not Paul LePage he lied to. He lied to a sitting governor.
Is there any other thing you would have done differently?
Yeah. Michaela Murphy, I wouldn't have reappointed her either because she lied as well, but slightly different, a slightly different scenario. She had promised me she wouldn't do any more activism on the bench, and the morning, 9 o'clock after the election night, she had Janet Mills running around in her chamber, and I thought that was disgusting.
Governor, have you ever regretted losing your temper?
No.
And using language that...
No, not at all. And I'll tell you why. It's very simple. My wife said it, I'm very passionate. And if you recall, I have never started a battle in this state. I react to battles, and I'm a counterpuncher. When I was on the streets at 11 years old, I got beat up, and I got pushed around, and I got kicked around. And it got into under your skin, and that becomes part of you. And I learned one thing very early on in life. If you turn the other cheek, it hurts. And I promised that if I believe in something, I'm not turning the other cheek. I'm going to fight back. And I have, and I'm telling you, I think many will say that the first term was really rough. The first term was rough because I knew what had to be done, and I knew that I couldn't get it done if I caved. It would not be done, and we would be suffering today. We'd still have remnants of the crash. We had to take the sour pill and fix it, and now we're better for it. And I'm very, very proud. As I leave this state, it's in the best financial condition it's been in 60 years.
I guess what I was getting at is we're both grandfathers. And some of the language you used when you lost your temper, as a grandfather, I tried to explain to my grandson what it was causing the governor to be so angry and upset.
What's happened to me, and I'm a victim of my own passion. Many things have been published and said that I said that was never said in this state. And I'll tell you, I have never said to the NAACP to kiss my butt. That was never said. What I said to the reporter was, "You kiss it," because you are being disrespectful. And she decided to say that I said the NAACP. That's happened on numerous occasions. I was reported to the FBI for an investigation when I was in a simulator at Pratt Whitney with Senator Susan Collins sitting there, and they jokingly said, "What would you like to blow up?" I said, "How about the Press Herald?" The next thing I know, I'm under investigation by the Federal Bureau of Investigation because someone thought I was going to blow it up, and the report came back and said, "Sorry to say, he was joking."
Does this go to a point you made to me once after we completed an interview, and he says, you looked right at me, and he says, "The problem with you guys is you take me too serious sometimes."
Yeah, it's not just me. It's we take ourselves too seriously. Ask my wife. We laugh at each other all the time. Because if you take yourself too seriously, you start believing your own baloney.
Anne, is there anything you'd like to add to this?
Yes. I often said that I know there's a persona, and I've said it before, that people who like Paula Page, they love Paula Page. People who don't like Paula Page despise Paula Page. But if you want to see the real Paula Page, you put him in a room full of kids, and that's the Paula Page that I know. And that's the Paula Page that our friends and family know. You are very passionate. You can be very gruff, but I think he does it from the heart because he cares.
Yeah, you know, when I came in, I was listening to people, even from my own party, saying, "You got to do it this way, you got to do it this way, you got to do it this way." I spent 20 years of my life helping companies out of bankruptcy, out of troubles. And her sister.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to bring that up.
Her sister has a hair salon, and she was having some financial trouble. And so she asked for advice. And her response to me, I give her advice, and her response is, "But you don't know how to run a salon." And my response to her was, "And you don't know how to run a business."
No, she said, "You don't know how to cut hair."
"You don't know how to cut hair." And I said, "You don't know how to run a business." Because a business, there's a formula, and you can't violate economics. You just can't. And when you try, you get in trouble. When I came to Augusta in 2011, the third floor, 2 and 2 equals 6. because the way that they just spend. But it took us 2 years to convince them that 2 and 2 equals 4, and it needs to be balanced. It was really incredible. And yes, there's sometimes you just can't negotiate 2 and 2 equals 4. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be 4. And if you spent $6, you're going to be $2 in the hole. It's that simple.
Governor LePage, some people say, and I know you've heard people say this, that Maine had Trump before the nation had Trump,
yeah.
Comparing you to Donald Trump. How do you take that comparison?
Well, I'll tell you this. The New York Times put out an article right after he was elected and said, before Teflon Don, there was bulletproof LePage. And my family and my wife and my daughter will say, I have more lies than a cat, political lies than a cat. And the fact of the matter is, yes, guilty on both counts. I think Donald Trump's doing a phenomenal job with the economy. I think he's doing a phenomenal job with foreign policy. I think he is who he is, and I think he was right for the time. I think in 2010, despite all my gruffness and whatever you want to call it, I was right for the time. History has a way of doing that. I think FDR was right for the time. I think Harry Truman was certainly right for the time. John F. Kennedy, I wish he could have lived a little longer because I think he had a lot to offer, but he was taken down early. So I think history has proven that certain people come to the top and rise to the occasion when they're needed. And in my case, it was fixing the finances of the state.
You just said you have political 9 lives. What number are you on?
About 14.
My daughter used to say when they were running the reelection campaign, running Paula Page's campaign is like watching your 2-year-old run into a turnpike full of traffic, and there's nothing you can do to stop him.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not sure I like that analogy. But does that mean, Governor LePage, that this is the end? Or
Yes.
Absolutely, positively,
no,
or
no,
we'll see?
No. It's the end.
I was going to say, that's not what you said this morning.
No, it's the end of my... It's the end of my political aspirations, but I will say this. If Janet Mills does what I think, at least listening for the last month of what they're saying they're going to do, I'll be back in 2022 to fix the mess because they are spending more than we have available, which means they're going to have to raise taxes and get us right back into a recession. And I just can't believe that she would, on day one, say that and do that.
But you're wishing her the best.
Oh, I wish her the best. I want her to succeed. She succeeds, the state succeeds. But you cannot say that you're going to expand Medicaid on January 2nd, even if the federal government doesn't participate. That's $200 million right off the bat. You can't say that. And she says, we don't care if we don't have a state plan amendment. You should care because it's 70% of the bill.
We have to take a quick break. We're talking with Governor and Ann LePage. Your comments and questions when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Skudik Institute, pursuing collaborative solutions to critical environmental challenges through discovery. Support their work at skudikinstitute.org. And Portland Buy Local, encouraging holiday shoppers to think locally this year. Information and gift guide online at portlandbylocal.org.
I'm Corva Coleman. Politics dominated the headlines over the past year, but 2018 was a big news year for a lot of other reasons, too.
Astronomers announced today that they have found a new planet in our solar system.
In northern Thailand, Thai Navy SEALs say the effort to rescue 12 boys and their soccer coach from a flooded cave has succeeded.
8-year-old snowboarding sensation Chloe Kim scored the 3rd gold medal for the United States at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang.
SpaceX successfully launched what is now the most powerful rocket in the world.
So much happened in 2018, and we were there for it all, bringing you in-depth and up-to-date news and analysis, whether it was across the world or in your hometown. And it's all because of your support. Help us tackle 2019. Give a year-end gift today. And thanks.
Make your year-end donation today at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. I'm here with Maine Public Radio political correspondent Mal Leary, and we are talking with Governor Paul LePage and First Lady Ann LePage. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'll start with this one because it's what we were talking about before the break. Jim on Facebook asks, given that federal funds would cover much of the cost and that Maine can easily cover the rest and that many Mainers need the coverage, why does he continue to oppose Medicaid expansion? And this is a question you wanted to get, right?
Yeah. I never oppose Medicaid expansion. I oppose Medicaid expansion only if you don't have a sustainable way of paying for it. And that's the key issue. You have to have a sustainable way to pay for it. Most states use the hospital tax to pay for it. It's reimbursable through the Medicaid reimbursement, the FMAP from the federal government. For some reason, Democrats don't want to do it that way. And unfortunately, what you're doing is you're taking it out of general funds and it's not reimbursable. Why would you do that? Makes no sense.
So if the state of Maine, in your reading, if they take this out of the general fund, that we won't get the 90% match from the federal government?
We're never going to get 90%. I don't know where you folks all think there's 90%. There's only a band of people that the reimbursement rate for the state of Maine is 60%. There is a group out there that will get dual eligibles will get up to 90%. But that's a small piece of the whole pie. Out of 350,000 people, we're talking 20,000 people. So this whole thing is a fallacy. The reimbursement rate is right around 60 to 61%. The rest of it's picked up by the state. If you use the hospital tax to fund your share, then when you get your reimbursement from the federal government, they will reimburse you 60% of the tax. That's how it works. It's really not that complicated. But for some reason, it's very difficult to make people understand it. I've never been against the first of all, people say people aren't getting health insurance. Totally wrong. Everybody in this state right now can get health insurance on the exchanges. In matter of fact, when you do the expansion, people are going to drop the insurance they have on the exchanges and they're going to go to Medicaid. And some of them are paying $10 a month, some are paying $20 a month, some people are paying $100 a month. And that's really what we're doing. And the other problem with that is Medicaid reimbursement from the federal government is about 60 to 70 cents on a dollar, while the exchange is 100% on a dollar.
Well, there's some people who make too little. Every time we do a program on signing up for the exchanges, we have people call and our experts say, I'm sorry, you fall below that.
And those should be covered by the state. No question. They should be picked up to 100%. They should be picked up. If they call the state, they should be on. And that's not about expansion. They automatically qualify. The category people we're talking about is between 100 and 138. Maine was a early expander in 2002. They do not qualify for the 90%. And we have a letter to that effect. And the left has been saying, We qualify. I blew up the letter. I took it to a debate. It's signed by the federal government. You do not qualify. But they still don't want to admit that we don't qualify.
We have a tweet. I met Ann briefly in Augusta for LD 673, getting the tip credit restored. She was very pleasant, and it was great to have her support. I've never met Paul, but thank you for your service. Governor LePage, what do you want people to know about Ann?
She's the nicest and sweetest person on the face of the earth, and I love her dearly.
Aw. Love you too, dear.
We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I never particularly liked Governor LePage in particular. He once was on your program wherein he said, I know two places are going to close, one with 800 jobs and one with 600 jobs. And he wouldn't name them. And I waited for months and months and months, and nothing happened. And I will be glad when Governor LePage isn't there so that we can have the truth.
Larry, is your question, what were those companies and what happened?
He wouldn't name the companies, and obviously if 800 jobs in Maine died, which were passed out, were closed,
Have you been to Old Town recently, sir?
Okay, go ahead, Governor.
Have you been to Old Town recently?
Yes.
There's a mill there that is closed.
University.
And is the mill running?
And that
the mill's just been recently...
And that was not the time wherein you said 800 jobs were going to be lost. That was not the time. That was well after that.
That's not true, sir. That was one of the companies.
Thank you for your time.
Larry, thanks for your call. We have an email from Pam. It's a personal question. Your bariatric surgery made a big difference, but how do you feel? How is your health since?
My health is excellent. I couldn't be any better. It got rid of diabetes. It got rid of sleep apnea. It got rid of high blood pressure. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Absolutely. It is one of the best decisions we both made, and I'm glad we both had it done.
Barry on Facebook? I think he was someone I could share a beer with, held empathy for and honored our differences, and feel deeply saddened by scars still evident from his professed early trauma. How do you feel? I know that a lot of people have sort of applied some sort of pop psychology to how your childhood affects how you govern.
Of course it does. You are who you, what you, your life is who you are. It's what you go through. It's your experiences. And I said earlier that being on the streets and being kicked around by everybody around you sort of toughens you up a little bit. And yes, certainly, my upbringing certainly has a whole lot to do with it. And I'll tell you, if you take a look at what I have fought for, there are two things. Try to get the people on welfare, the poor people off welfare and more prosperous. And I am constantly fighting against domestic violence, and I've had bills and bills after bills after bills to toughen the laws against domestic violence, and the legislature shot them down year in and year out, and this year we're facing two children that were killed this past year because they would not listen.
Let me ask you this. You know, there's been so many studies and so much research going on right now about why some people who suffer really horrible trauma as a child are resilient and make it. And some people don't. Some people are sort of shattered for their lifetime and have, lifelong problems. Why do you think you
I have my problems. I have my own skeletons that my family knows that I have. Listen, you don't live the lifestyle that I had early on without any lingering issues.
I will say, though, that Paul was also very lucky that he ran into two wonderful families that he lived part-time with one and part-time with the other. And to this day, we maintain a very close relationship with them, but they also were very important in your childhood.
Bruce Myrick in my lifetime was sort of the father I didn't have, and Pauline Collins was sort of the Anne LePage I didn't have in my life. And being the disciplinarian, the one that really pushed me, the one that made sure if I skipped school, that she would make sure that Bruce knew about it and Eddie knew about it and everybody knew about it, so I couldn't do it again.
But those two families shaped who you are, too.
Yeah, big time shaping. Mm-hmm. Big, big, big time. But you know, those scars don't totally go away. You can deal with them and you move on. But look, everybody has demons one way or another. Some are more severe than others, and we all have to cope with them. I am very fortunate. I had two great families that helped me, and I have a great family that keeps me straight. And I'll tell you, my kids.
Some days are easier than others.
But the kids are what's really important. And the minute one of our children is born, that just changes you. It changes your perspective, and you got to focus in because it's not about you anymore. It's about your family.
Your last comment brought back. Shouldn't the people of Maine know what they were getting into because of the things you said when you were campaigning?
Well,
I remember very well when we did a TV interview, and my last question to you was sort of a softball. I said, if you win, how are you going to celebrate? And you leaned into the camera and said, that's X-rated. Oh, and I remember going out through the control room afterwards, and Ann had been in the control room.
Exactly.
And she was going, Paul, what were you thinking? So I kind of relate to what you're saying there.
We've been married, 34 years?
Yeah.
This past September, and Paul is no different today than the day that I met him. No different at all.
You know, people say we didn't know what we're getting into. Well, if you didn't know what you're getting into, you weren't paying attention, because I was 4 years as a counselor in Waterville, 8 years as a mayor of Waterville, and Waterville had a lot of turmoil in those years. And when I left, Waterville was on top of the world with all kinds of money in the bank. Taxes were down and people were loving me. But when I first get in, it was tough.
Dylan on Facebook asks, given our time of political tension, why did he insist on driving a wedge between Northern and Southern Maine instead of being a governor of all Mainers?
A wedge? I totally don't understand that one. Do we have two Maines? Certainly we have two Maines. The state of Maine is controlled by Cumberland County, and we have the rest of Maine. We have 16 counties. We have 14 that are struggling and two that really drive the state. If that's a wedge, I'm sorry, but that's reality. I love all of Maine. I thought it was inappropriate for things that were happening in Moosehead to have the hearings in Portland. I think the hearings should have been in Moosehead. If that's wedging, I don't know. It was certainly never an intent. I love the rural parts of Maine. As a matter of fact, if you look at the gifts that the commissioners are getting this year, it's about pictures of northern Maine through the four seasons. So I don't know. Am I a fan of Portland? I don't know. I think they're very powerful. They're the 500-pound gorilla in the room, and they're very difficult at times. But no, wow.
I don't think you ever went out purposely trying to divide Maine. I think it would be just the opposite.
Just the opposite. I don't know where that came from.
This is from Kevin in Aroostook County. I had a group of young people in high school who were there for Ag Day. They were in with the governor the day they did the vote on the minimum wage, and he explained it very succinctly and calmly, unlike what was happening in the legislature. Ann LePage is right. You put him in a room with young people, and he was great. Thank you for that. So that's from Kevin in Aroostook County.
Thank you, Kevin.
A question, do you feel there's more you could have done for the people outside of Cumberland County related to the question before?
You know, from an executive point of view, a governor can only implement the laws that are put to him from the legislature. Did we fight a lot of regulations and laws that were being proposed? I think we did. We certainly fought for the rural areas of Maine. In fact, if I'm being accused of anything, it's probably fighting for rural Maine versus the urban areas. But no, a governor can only implement what is handed to him by the legislature. Have I vetoed a lot? Yes, I have vetoed a lot. And if you take a look at the bills that I vetoed, a lot of them are to try to get one Maine, because much of it is the strength of the South versus the rest of the state.
I'm glad you brought up your vetoes. I know you have. I've just been reminded that one of your dogs is named Veto. Mal, what was it like covering this administration compared to the others you've covered in terms of vetoing?
Well, my history goes back a long ways. Under Governor Longley, the first governor I covered, made quite a name for himself because he did a lot of vetoes but don't worry, your number, which exceeds all the other governors put together in recent modern times.
For 100 years.
So it's been very difficult that way, because sometimes it felt like, Governor, you were acting as the 186th legislator.
I was in
vetoing legislation as opposed to the gubernatorial role.
The gubernatorial role, you know, it's as important to stop bad legislation than it is to implement good legislation. It's very, very important. And I will tell you one bill that still haunts me. We have passed a bill. It's been in law now for a little over 3 years. And it says that if you're a foreign national and you move to Maine, and in your native country you had some difficulty with sex acts. You had some, you got charged or arrested or incarcerated for doing something sexual. You will voluntarily put yourself on a sex offender list when you arrive in Maine. That's the law in Maine. I watch it every year. It's been on the books for 3 years. Nobody's registered. It's a needless bill because it cannot be enforced. We wasted time on something like that instead of finding a way to pay for Medicaid expansion.
We're talking with Governor Paul LePage and First Lady Ann LePage. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Seniors Plus, Western Maine's agency on aging. Meals on Wheels and more for older adults, disabled adults, and caregivers. SeniorsPlus.org. And the State Theater in Portland, presenting Roseanne Cash and her band on April 9th. Reserved seated tickets available at statetheaterportland.com.
In an era where fake news and alternative facts often get more attention than actual facts, you need a news source that's proved itself to be trustworthy. But what does trust look like and what does it sound like? Hi, I'm Mara Liasson. Building a rapport and trust takes time. In news, it also means being transparent, reporting the facts, and taking full responsibility for your stories. Relationship building is especially important in public radio because you, our listeners, are at the center of our work. Informing you is the reason we exist as a news network. You value news that's independent and unbought. That's the relationship you have with public radio. So show your trust in us as 2018 comes to a close and make a year-end gift.
Make your year-end donation today at mainepublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. I'm here in our Augusta studio with Maine Public's Mal Leary. And our guests today are Governor Paul LePage and First Lady Ann LePage. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Before the break, we were talking about, Governor LePage, your love of the veto pen. And earlier we were talking about a dog named Vito in your home. And what is Vito the dog like?
Vito is a Jack Russell. He's very feisty, much like the governor. He is a handful, a great, great dog, but he didn't have a very good upbringing. But Paul has begged me, ever since we had Vito, to get two more dogs that he wanted to call Sustain and Override. And I had to call in on a radio show the other night because he was talking about the two other dogs that we possibly could get, and I told him that it was not on Santa's list. Santa sent me a note and said, no, they will not be riding in the sleigh this year. Go to Plan B.
So what are you going to do about that? You're still governor for 2 weeks. I guess you're not the governor of the North Pole, though.
Well, I'm going to listen to her advice because early on in our marriage, I had a dog, and I was away for a week working out of state, and she sold him when I was away, so I'm afraid she'd probably do it again. And when she did that, she sold the dog. At the time, I said, well, how much do you get for it? And she says, $200. So when I was campaigning in 2010, I ran into a gentleman about in his 80s, and he said, Governor, Pepper had a great life. She lived till she was 16. She was a wonderful dog for my daughter, and it's the best $300 I ever spent.
That is a true story. That is a true story. And when the gentleman died, the family asked if Paul would go to the funeral and tell the story about Pepper in the church. So he did. So my secret was out. I pocketed that extra $100. But this was a dog we paid like $1,200 for.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did sell Pepper.
An email from Becca. Having not historically been a fan of our governor, I also have to admit there have been a couple things I did approve of. Despite my disappointment with the way he has spoken at times, I appreciate listening in right now to his thoughts, as well as the dynamic between him and Ann, who seems to provide a terrific balance to that gruffness. We'll go to John, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me? Sorry. Yes. Hi. I voted for you, Governor, and I believe in a lot of things you were saying. I'm a business owner here in town. I really was right on board with you from the beginning. But there was one little glitch that bothered me throughout the years of your running or being in the House. You made a wedge through minorities. I'm a minority, and it bothered me because I was on board with you, but it was a disappointment because it seemed like every time there was something going on, you would say little slangs and this and that bothered me considerably. I've been in Maine since 82. It bothered me, and I want to know, where did that come from? I'm a straight talker, too. I say it like it is, but I don't go out and say certain things to offend people and separate people. Just your thoughts on where did that come from? Why did you think it was a need to do that? Thank you.
So, John, I'm going to interrupt if I can. Ask, what specifically are you talking about? What the governor said was bothersome to you?
One thing bothered me through the years, he said these black guys come up here and yo-yo man and looking for impregnating these white girls, things of that nature. That really bothered me because, you know, not all black people are black people in general. That's not their goal. Every person wants to have a good life for their family and have a future, make a living, and leave something behind for their kids and grandkids. It offended me to no end.
I understand where you're coming from now. Go ahead, Governor.
And the fact of the matter is, it's true. I'm sorry, but 97 out of the 100 that we check, I went through every single case that was reported over a four-year period, and 97% were minority.
But listen, I don't think you're criticizing minorities.
I'm not criticizing minority. I'm criticizing the drugs that are coming from Lowell, Mass., Waterbury, Connecticut, and the Bronx. I'm sorry, but that's where they're coming from.
John, thank you for calling. And go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead.
You can finish what you're going to say.
I was about to say, I'm not from the Bronx. I'm not from that part. I'm from the southern part of the country, Florida. So I'm not from the New York area. I've never sold drugs. They have nothing to do with me. And my problem with that is being a business owner and successful and having employees work for me and things of that nature. What bothered me is that it's not that simple. And considering the majority of the drugs in this world are by other people, not minorities. So that's a problem. I mean, I wish you to do a little bit more research and study on the issue for the whole country. And I think that you would have been able to be a little bit more careful. But thank you. Merry Christmas.
John, thank you for your call. I will move on to Lucas, who's calling from Hamden. Hi, Lucas. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer, and thanks for taking my call. This is Lucas St. Clair calling, and I know the governor and I, we didn't always agree on things and only met once briefly. But I wanted to first thank you for your tremendous public service. I know you've taken tremendous personal sacrifices to do your job for the last 8 years. And now that you're in good health and you've got a strong back, I'd like to invite you and Ann up to take a personal tour of Katahdin Woods and Waters with me. I think you'd really love the place, and I hope you'll take me up on the offer.
Well, it'll have to be in the spring because we're heading south.
Yeah, we'll
Lucas, I don't want anybody to have a misunderstanding of what, how I feel, why I feel the way I do about the Northern Woods. In this country, 75% of forest fires occur on federal lands. The federal government does a very, very poor job, and they underfund the maintenance of the forest. And that's my biggest concern. And the reason I'm concerned about Northern Woods is it's located adjacent to Baxter State Park, which I believe is one of the crown jewels of the state of Maine. And I fear that with their track record of the federal government in maintaining forest lands, that it's in danger. If you recall, back in 1947 or 48, Acadia National Park burnt right to, you know, just burnt completely. And that's my biggest fear. And every summer since I've been governor, we've been fighting major, major wildfires in this country.
Lucas, are you still there?
I am, yeah, and I agree. Fire management is a big issue, and some of it which has been addressed in this year's Farm Bill. But I agree that Baxter is one of our crown jewels, and the open invitation is there. I hope to see you up there.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call, Lucas. We'll go to Margie calling from Jonesboro. Hi, Margie. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, you know what? Governor LePage did a great job, and his wife as well. Because that job is really tough. But did they think you could change the weather or what? You know, I just think it's sad to see you go, and you're tough. And I really liked it. My sons liked it. And one more thing. Yeah, I just lost my dog. So pet your doggy for me, okay?
Oh, thank you so much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, dear.
Thanks for your call, Margie. We'll go to Troy calling from Portland. Hi, Troy. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Great. Thank you. Hello, Governor LePage.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, sir. Hey, I'd like to thank you for supporting heat pumps. I think they're a great tool for energy efficiency in Maine. I think that's a really good thing you've done. But I would like to ask you about renewable energy and solar power particularly. I know that you haven't been a supporter of some of the legislation that's come forward in the last couple of years. And that, you know, it seems to me that's a real lost opportunity with the solar. You know, it can provide good paying jobs for local solar installers and, you know, good high paying jobs in the trades and electrical services. And so I was curious if you could tell us a bit more about why you didn't think that was a good opportunity.
It's very, very simple. Wind and solar are intermittent energy sources. In other words, you can only get energy when the sun shines and the wind blows. So that's one basic thing. Until such time as we can do scale battery storage for these energies, then they're always going to be intermittent. And so that's one issue. But that issue is not the issue that I'm concerned about. The issue I'm concerned about is that the subsidies that are given from solar and from wind are tremendous. They're not just 10 times. On solar, they're like 15 times more than oil or gas. And on wind, it's about 10 times more. So you're asking, and the only people that can afford solar panels on their roofs are usually people that can afford to have two heating systems. But you're asking people that can't afford two heating systems to pay for it. And that's my problem, is you're asking the poor to pay for the rich.
Troy, thanks for your call. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. Robert in Waldoboro, if you can be quick, that would be great.
Hi, Governor. Are you writing your autobiography, I hope?
No, sir.
Oh. Why?
No autobiography, no memoir?
Autobiography.
And what about you, a memoir?
That seems to be the question this week, over the last 2 weeks. Everybody wants to know if he's writing a book.
No, I'm not into that. That's not my style. That's not who I am. If somebody wants to write a biography, I might help them, but I have no interest in sitting down and reliving my life.
Thanks for your question, Robert. And Mal, you get the last question of the hour.
We were talking earlier about things that you regret. Is there any legislation that you regret having signed that took effect that was not do what you thought it would do?
Not that I recall, Mal. I will say this, that there was some legislation that was passed that I wish it would not have been tinkered with. For instance, and it just this past year, trying to keep the elderly in their homes and allowing communities or forcing communities to treat elderly the same way that we have banks treat elderly, I think was a really important bill. It was modified to the point where it doesn't do anything, and elderly are not safe, and everybody took a big win on that. Folks, that bill doesn't do what it says it does, and I feel so bad that we failed on that. But having said that, I'd like to say this in closing. It has been the biggest honor of my life to have served as governor. Coming from the streets of Lewiston, never, ever would I have thought I could achieve such an honor. I've done my best, and the best, and that's all I can say, is I, every day and every night, I went to bed thinking, did I do my best today? And I wake up in the morning, will I do my best today? And my wife and my children know that I am very passionate about this state. And so I did it. I did it my way, yes. And I tried to do it the best way that I knew how. And if I would have done what people have asked me, I'd have been an ordinary governor who got nothing done.
And for the record, Ann is tearing up a bit. Thank you both for being here on Maine Calling today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.